Hi, listener. This is Drew Franzblau with a special Season 1 finale episode of the Slow Dive Podcast. Today, we share a reflective spoken word piece titled Sick, Sad, and Mad, written and performed by Farida Rafiq, with sound design by Drew Franzblau. That's me. This spoken word piece is a poignant reflection on rebirth and resilience, exploring the pain of the pandemic and the isolation it brought alongside a collective hope for a better tomorrow. It dives into the personal and shared journeys of healing and growth, emphasizing that change begins with you, we, and us, united. It mirrors the process of climbing a mountain, only to unpack, reflect, and begin anew, underscoring the interconnectedness of individual and collective experiences. This piece encapsulates the impact of the past 5 years on our dreams, hopes, and fears, serving as a call to reflect on our shared existence and the legacy we leave for future generations. Sick, Sad, and Mad is the call. This is a reflective piece. What are you sick, sad, and mad about? What does peace look like? How can you be part of a peaceful coexistence? How can you be the light in the world? Will you extend grace, share a smile, or offer support and aid? We conclude Season 1 of the Slow Dive Podcast today. Thank you for listening, reflecting, and connecting with us. We wish you and yours an abundant, peaceful, and joyful 2025.
Bad business, bad blood, bad love, mad world, mad time, mad mind. Relationships, warships, worship, doves, humanity, drinking from reservoirs of love. Thirsty, malnourished, distracted. Canceled. Opinions redacted. Speak first. Speak loudest. Speak with cash. Speak carefully. Fast speak. Speak last. We are all sick, sad, and mad. Remedy isn't what's in demand. Healing is not a billboard. Love is not a refuge. Justice is not on land. Sky above and celestial spans. We are sick, sad, and mad. We are living, loving with raised hands. We are seeking, searching, sick, sad, and mad. We are all just sick, sad, and mad. Not knowing where the next ounce of truth will emerge. We are drowning in despair, but bubble wrapped in validation. What is this fuck shit? Fists in the air, battle cries, empty cupboards, in line for what are we waiting for? You, savior, you, saint and sinner, you on your pedestals, you with your big words, you with your big promises, say hope, say you, say I, say we put you there, we placed you there, we are unlearning, because we are all just sick, sad, and mad. Mylar, balloons. Mylar, blankets. Floored, on the cold floor. Sleeping? We are sick, sad, and mad, and we are separated. How do you birth something in a sleep? Did it arrive to you in a bundle? Do you see how you created it now? What is this fuck shit? You don't curse. You don't swear. You, are breaking curses. You take oaths. You forgot where you came from. You don't know where to go. Yet, we're all sick, sad, and mad. The sky is so blue. The sky so full of promise. The day so new. The blankets so old. The cries intoxicated. The cries silent. The cries obliterated. The food so warm. The streets so cold. The night so purple. The stars so far. The lights, they flicker. You keep on walking. Yet, we are all sick, sad, and mad. Wake up to shifts. Wake up to new normal every day. Wake up to excise and extortion. 60 minutes of my devaluation. 60 minutes of my theft. 60 minutes to be insured. 60 minutes from my bed. Nah. We are all sick, sad, and mad. Billboards upon billboards, signs upon signs, hieroglyphics upon send, recopied, copied sentiments. Scrolling upstream, exhausted. We are sick, sad, and mad. Do you think they feel their name when you are writing it? How many names are we going to write?
So, hi, listener. You just heard Farida's spoken word piece, Sick, Sad, and Mad, with sound design by me. I'm Drew Franzblau. You've probably heard my voice before, unless this is your first episode, in which case, welcome. Because I read out the end credits of all our episodes. I'm also the show's editor and producer. So Farida and I are here today to talk about what you just heard, Sick, Sad, and Mad. So Farida, I think I'll let you take it away.
Thank you, Drew, for that introduction. And thank you, Drew, for designing such a reflective piece, such a powerful piece. And I really like what you did with that.
Thanks.
I think what the whole mission behind the Slow Dive podcast, it is a community-centered engagement podcast, empathy, creative. We spotlight guests, but we also do these roundtables. And one of the things we were thinking about was maybe we should end the season with the reflective piece. And then Drew suggested, hey, we should have a roundtable about our reflective piece that we worked on. So people kind of get the understanding behind why we did this. And what our call to action is for our listeners, our audience, and people who support our mission and purpose behind the Slow Dive. First of all, I'd like to say this prose piece is a reflective piece. It does have a pretty heavy title, Sick, Sad, and Mad, but that is what I think, Drew, you said. You just said it so eloquently when we were discussing this in the sound designing meetings, that it was like a reflection or a collective of like, what was it? Commodifying of rage. Explain that, because that was a really good observation.
When you sent me this piece and I read it for the first time, what jumped out at me was that, you know, this is not a piece about necessarily why you should be sick, sad, and mad, but it's kind of about why it just seems like everyone is. There's a part of the piece, I want to say it's in the third stanza, where you say, remedy isn't what's in demand, healing is not a billboard. And that spoke to me because, you know, I've seen over the past 8 years or so how social media, I think, has commodified rage, like you said, and accelerated it, because it's what drives engagement, I suppose. It's what gets people's attention to stay on, because your attention is what is valuable in the social media space.
Yeah, the attention economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, it's one thing when you're writing it, but it's another thing when someone listens to a prose piece or spoken word and they get something. It's very subjective. So I'm so glad that's what you got from it, which is what I think I was trying to do. Like I wrote this poem back in 2020, and then I've been wanting to do a lot with it. I had originally wanted to do a musical, and then I was like, I will take these themes. And just so our listeners know what Sick, Sad, and Mad is about, and essentially it's like an umbrella term for what I think unanswered questions, people feeling lost, wherever they are in the world, right? Like, and not being able to find solutions or feeling helpless to the circumstances they're in. And I felt like, okay, well, what is our call to action? Like, here's what we're feeling. We feel loneliness is at an all-time high. There's an epidemic of loneliness in America. There is a fentanyl crisis. There is a healthcare crisis. The cost of living is high. Unhoused people, the homelessness population is growing. People overall, and that's just America, but this is across the world. And there's global conflict, right? There's war. There's climate displacement, displacement due to war. There is just, and there has always been suffering, but it seems like because we're so glued in to our gadgets and social media platforms, and it's like in our face all the time, we just feel it more, we realize it more. And I do think, and I mean, I'm not an expert on this, this is just coming from a writer's POV, that sometimes it does benefit people, companies, I don't know, anything, groups, to not provide solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Or delay or defer solutions. And maybe that's just bad planning. I don't know. Maybe that's intentional. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's subjective. That's for anyone who wants to come to their own understanding. But it does seem like what you said, that what happens with this bottled rage and anger and confusion, and unfortunately, horrible things happen in the world, right? People lose their sanity. They do dumb and stupid things to innocent people. And we don't want that. So that's definitely very important that we say that. Humanity first. I am a peaceful person by all means, and I don't think violence is ever the answer. But right. I do understand that there are people who lose their marbles and they get to a place where they can't navigate. And I think, I don't know, Drew, my understanding is, what can we do to be the antidote to that? Like, how can we as humans, or even through art, I guess, be an antidote or lessen the pain and suffering? Because I don't have all the answers. You know, we're all affected by at least one or two issues. Like, everybody has something in their life that they're dealing with, they're contending with. Some people's are bigger, some are smaller. But that's really where this poem came from. It was to
kind of take all that emotional residue that was just kind of lingering in the consciousness during the pandemic and then post-pandemic and then everything that's happened since then. It's been a wild ride in the country and also in the world. And as global citizens, like, okay, what's our call to action? What do we do to make peace in the world in our lives? What do we do when we're sick, sad, and mad about something and transmute that into positive ways? Like, you know, if we do feel like maybe systems or organizations or people or whatever have failed, quote, us, well, let's take personal accountability and responsibility. What can we do just as individuals? I don't know.
That's a really good question. I mean, I know what I think can be done at a collective level, which maybe is ultimately the only solution. I think, you know, people get to that point, like you were talking about, where they will do something violent, regrettable, when they have unmet needs in most cases. I mean, the truth is a lot of these people are not mentally ill that do stuff we're recording this on January 4th, and there's just been two really horrible incidents in our country.
Horrible.
on the same day even. And people get to that point when they have unmet needs. And I think, you know, I guess it's because it is the part that spoke to me most, but that healing isn't a billboard and remedy is not what's in demand. Like, not the things that these people need were not for sale. And there's nothing in our world that isn't for sale. I think that as a society we need to meet people's needs. And I think as individuals we can meet people where they're at a little bit. You know, before this morning, actually, I was watching a documentary on YouTube about people who used to be white supremacists.
Oh, wow.
That's the kind of thing that I do on a Saturday morning.
I like that, you said, they used to be. Because, yeah, there's always hope for people to...
It was really fascinating. I'm going to put the title up. It's called Return, Former White Supremacists and How They Left Hate Behind. It's on a YouTube channel called Dead Domain. We can link it in the show notes maybe.
Yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
You know, it was these people talking about basically what drew them to those, you know, really, really repugnant ideas, but then also what pulled them back. And in almost every case, what pulled them back to society was not something, you know, logical. It wasn't someone pointing out, you know, that all races are equal to them. And, oh, I didn't think of that. You know,
yeah.
It was like they had someone in their life who loved them and who didn't agree with what they believed, but also didn't abandon them. And so I think when people are cut off and isolated, then those things that feedback loop of rage and pain is the only thing that they have. And they go back to it because it's the only thing.
Yeah. What you just said resonates with me, because I feel like, you know, it doesn't serve global it as Pollyanna is as it is. I feel like I hope I aimed for a global peaceful coexistence. Mm-hmm. I aim for that. Do I think it'll happen while I'm alive? I hope so. But I know that is my goal in life. As long as I'm on this planet, like, my thing is community. And I think what you just said, when people are in isolation or when people are separated or divided, and they only see one portion. So, like, one of the things with our roundtable is the whole idea is that we hold space, because we may know someone, we may not personally have the direct experience of maybe, God forbid, a terrorist attack that we have a victim or we were a victim of, or we may not have a direct experience of being homeless. We may not have the direct experience of losing a loved one in an unfortunate situation. But if we open ourselves up to hold space for people and just listen, we'll know one more person's experience. And through that experience, maybe we'll have more empathy and understanding.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with community. It's like, it's a buzzword, but it's actually an active word. Like you have to, when you, like I always say, like my litmus test for myself is like my group of people I interact with, the people I work with, the people I break bread with, how diverse is that? Do I only meet with people that align with exactly my views? No, I'm open to exchanging ideas. And I also want to give someone the benefit of the doubt. Like, you know, maybe, like you said, like, you know, being the right company, right people. Why did someone leave white supremacy? Why was that? Was it because someone didn't give up on them? Was it because they finally saw the light? They had a breakthrough moment. They're like, oh, wow, my thinking was so limited. I was operating from such a hateful place because I was maybe angry. Who knows? I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not a psychologist. But, you know, even like earlier experiences can really somehow set up these like horrible belief systems for people later on. And because they're not familiar to, let's say, a certain group or that, they can vilify it, or they're more prone to being influenced by negative tropes and understanding. So I think one of the good things about information, age, and technology is that the world did get smaller, and we can easily connect with different groups of people. In the same way, it's also easier to connect for people with negative intentions, with mm-hmm. who are looking to divide and polarize people. So, right. Yeah. So I think the reason, I mean, honestly, Drew, like I know, I feel like this was just a big cathartic outlet to write this, based on a lot of different things happening to a lot of global citizens around the world, you know, and it goes from healthcare to the loneliness and epidemic to homelessness to the cost of living crisis, which affects everybody and families, single people, married people, the healthcare crisis, which, you know, unfortunately, we had that incident. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, what are you going to do if you are sick, sad, and mad? That's a peaceful thing. What could you do? And I always feel like nonprofits and community support groups and collectives and co-ops, that's what they're doing. They're supplementing or creating solutions or spaces for people where maybe the bigger, I guess, I don't want to use the word government or politicians or groups, but people are collectively coming together like, okay, well, I'm going to be the solution. I'm going to start this, and I'm going to figure out a way we can get diapers at a lower rate for lower income families in this cost of living crisis, or we can get baby formula for moms who need it, who are out of work. There's things that we can do. What does that look like with the problems that you're dealing with? Like, rhetorically, reflectively, whoever's listening to this. So I don't know if you wanted to add to that. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the thing about feeling sick, sad, and mad is we've been talking about ways that people respond to that, that are unhealthy. And I think that people who do that, it's because they can't conceive of a community-based collective solution to those problems. You look at, I don't know how, Frida, we can cut this if you don't want to talk about it, but the person who attacked the healthcare CEO. What awful. Happened to that? Yeah, it was. I'm someone who's in favor of universal healthcare, but that's certainly not the way I think that we're going to get it.
No.
It takes a collective solution. It's only people coming together and working together peacefully will achieve that. But this person, he you know, whoever, I mean, we don't know if the individual that's been charged is guilty, I suppose, but this person wanted that, but they couldn't conceive of working with other people to achieve it. So they did it on their own.
It didn't solve anything.
what they did spoke to a lot of people's anger, but it doesn't actually accomplish anything. And if everyone who felt that way came together, then there no one would feel the need to do what that person did.
Yeah.
You know, so that is exactly what you were saying, Frida, is what I would say to anyone who feels sick, sad, and mad is find the people in your community who are helping and join them. Mm-hmm. Whether it's trying to get diapers or food to families, or figuring out how can we make it so that people don't need that kind of charity, right? With policy or something. But getting involved with your fellows, with your community, I'm not going to say that it alleviates those feelings of sick, sad, and mad, but it definitely gives you something to do with those feelings that's better than just stewing in them. You know, to speak personally for a minute, like when I was younger, and I guess I was learning about how the world works, I definitely felt sick, sad, and mad. I didn't know what to do with it. It never even crossed my mind to do something violent about those feelings. But what did happen to me is when I look back, I alienated people in my life that were friends with me, that were close to me, because I was just an angry person.
Hmm.
This was maybe 8-10 years ago. It actually took one particular friend, like, speaking to me and just saying, like, hey, we're really worried about how upset you are all the time.
Yeah.
And I listened and I thought, look, I have to do something about those feelings that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've done, among other things, well, I do stuff like this now. I started a couple of podcasts. This is my fifth or sixth one that I've worked on. And that became like an outlet for me to express myself, and to put energy into.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's so illuminating, Drew, because the truth is that's very brave of you to share, because a lot of us have felt like that. Or have been angry, or even, I mean, you know, even depression, or having, you don't have to have clinical depression, but even having depressive times in your life, depression is just anger turns inward. It's because you feel helpless, you're confused, you're lost, you may not have the support you need, you may have things that you're trying to process. And once again, disclaimer, I'm not a therapist and I'm not a psychiatrist, but I am someone who's been in therapy. I understand that how important it is to have healthy outlets, right? To alchemize and transmute and channel your frustration in healthy ways. Because to make sense of why we're feeling. But I think one of the things that you just shared, which maybe will connect with a lot of our listeners, is that you had a moment of self-awareness where you said, I need to do something about this. And you took personal responsibility, and maybe you were open to receptive help, and then you're able to then move through it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also had someone in my life that called me out on it. You know, I'm very lucky I had that at the time, too.
Yeah. How do you feel? How do you feel about that person? Are you grateful that they intervened and they said something? And how do you hold them in that regard? Because I'll be honest with you, in my life, I've had to be someone that's had to dish out some tough love to certain people in my life. They weren't ready to receive it, but it was coming from a good place, because I saw them, they were just in a lot of pain, or maybe sabotaging or out of control, or just they were lost. And it was really hard to watch someone you care about be in so much misery, but they weren't ready to receive it. So I was, you know, they weren't ready for the help. So like, I'm just to get curious, because you're a guy, and I would love to know your perspective, because I know as a woman, I have a different, like, I'm like, some of us just like to, well, anyways, I would like to know, like, how do you hold that person in regard now that brought that to your awareness?
I'm definitely grateful that they spoke up at the time. I think it was part of me becoming a more complete person. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, where we don't talk so much anymore. We've just drifted apart.
Yeah.
But I am grateful to that person, and I think about the conversation that we had a lot, because I had a lot of feelings and thoughts about like what was wrong with the world, mm-hmm. but I wasn't doing anything good about it.
Yeah.
All I was doing was upsetting people around me.
Hmm.
I think that sick, sad, and mad speaks to people that a lot of people feel that way. I mean, you know, we started this conversation, like I said, talking about people who do really extreme things with those emotions.
Yeah.
But the truth is,
we don't like that.
No. But the thing is, I think that everyone feels it. Or at least most people do. I don't know if I want to meet the person who doesn't feel it at all.
Yeah.
We all feel that, but we're and everyone is doing something with it, whether it's healthy or unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. I think the other part of this is like, I think a level of maturity as we go through our lives is like being accountable and checking ourselves first, mm-hmm. And being responsible for our own emotional regulation. And that's like a fancy word. Doesn't mean that you have to have any kind of mental disorder or any personality disorder. It just means if you're hurt, you're not bleeding all over people figuratively, right? Metaphorically. It's like, if you're hurt about something and you're wiling out, take personal responsibility and tend to yourself, give yourself compassion, get the support and tools that you need. Now, the sad part is there is a good portion of people in this world that don't have access to supportive friends, may not have families, may not have resources to therapists or community things. So they may feel hopeless. And that is when their mind goes off the deep end, where they don't know how to figure it out. But for those who feel like they can't make sense of their emotions, they have to step outside themselves and find help on their own. Because, you know, I feel like increasingly the world has always had its problems. It's never like, I think in my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation, there just wasn't like an Instagram and TikTok and YouTube shorts and media in your face, but their problems were pretty, pretty heavy too. And they dealt with it that. And I think one of the good things, once again, is being proactive if you see someone, but like being in charge of your own emotions. I think, I think take a beat and realize, you know, I'm not healthy.
Well, yeah. I think there's another part of the reflective piece where you said, we are drowning in despair, but bubble wrapped in validation.
Mm-hmm.
That also really like stood out to me because, you know, validation's not always like a good thing. You can validate something that's actually wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what happens when someone is isolated, like we were talking about, when they don't have a support network that won't. You know, people need validation all the time, but they also need to be checked when they're wrong.
Right. Because sometimes attention seeking behavior could be like negative behavior.
Mm-hmm,
if you want validation, people wild out. It's kind of like, yeah, it's on a spectrum. Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about social media, and the thing about social media is that you can get validation on social media for anything that you want. Whatever you're mm-hmm. doing, there's someone who will validate it, whether it's good or bad for you. It's a lot easier, in fact, to find validation for the wrong things on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it's engineered to do. I mean, there's the concept of the Twitter main character of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who has done or said something embarrassing, and now everyone is just going to gawk at them for like 24 hours.
Yeah, it's a social algorithm too. Like when mm-hmm. you're on these sites, like whatever you pay attention to, you get more of it. And if yeah. you're someone that's operating and paying attention to, because you're down in the dumps or you're feeling lost in life and you're find yourself in groups that are negative, well, you're just being fed more of that negativity. So it's kind of hard. I personally, I don't know about you, Drew, I really don't care for social media. I use it very, very. I only have an Instagram for this podcast because of our guests. They're like, they want to promote it. They're on it, and we really appreciate them. So I created one, but my robot intern is the one who manages it. And I do not even deal with it because I feel like, personally, this is in the poem, copied, recopied sentiments. People are also losing source of their authenticity and their true selves because they're just doom scrolling and scrolling upstream and just being told what to think. And it's becoming second nature. Whereas the analog days, I feel, and I think we've had these talks with some of our guests in film and TV, Drew, is that the olden days before Instagram and before TikTok, I mean, Facebook is not so awful when it comes to ideas and ideating and being original. But in the olden days, people just, like producers, creatives, storytellers, whoever, songwriters, musicians, actors, we just followed our natural inclinations and are explored and were allowed to be bored and found yeah. creative ways to be authentic. And everybody wasn't looking like the same influencers. Our music wasn't the same style. There was more, I guess, I don't know if this is the correct term, subcultures and subgenres, and there was more, I don't know, authenticity. Now it feels like it is socially engineered through algorithms where this works for one person, so now everybody is like doing that same thing. And I find that to be very limiting as a creative, because I'm reading the same stuff over and over again. I'm just like, where is the genuine original material? And I know a lot of our ideas are in the collective quote unconscious, and it's not 100% original. We all take inspiration from life. There's a lot of us on this planet, but some downright is just lazy storytelling. I'm like, where is it? And I think it's because we're all immersed in the same stuff over and over again. And it's just like spin cycle. And I don't know how to articulate it, but for me, it's like, I can tell when I meet a writer or even an actor or even another creative producer or storyteller that is like not spending time on social media because they have some newer insights. They have some more reflections on what they're working on. They can express themselves so eloquently, and they can tell me exactly why they like this and why they don't, which I think is very powerful. Because people, I feel, and this is an opinion, have lost sight of what they truly want and why they like something and don't like it. And they're just like kind of lost in the sauce of social media. And maybe that's mm-hmm. just me. But for me, it's too much. I can't. I need to step away and be bored and discover and find that. And that's something else that I think that was also in the poem, copied, recopied sentiments. Things are just like buzzwords. They've blocked like a lot of virtue signaling. Like it's a lot of performative work. When we say, oh, we don't want gun violence, we can post it 20 million times. Stop these stupid school shootings. But beyond posting it on social media, what are we doing outside of that?
I think that's another area where people just feel a lot of despair.
Yeah.
When with gun violence in America, it's like no one feels like they can do anything about it. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I know what people ought to be doing about it.
Yeah.
But it does make me sad when I think about like this has happened in our country so many times.
Oh my gosh, too much.
And I think that people have just become almost like tired. And I mean, you're absolutely right, Farida, that no one, I don't think anyone at this point thinks that just posting on the internet about it is it does anything. You know, people have become very cynical about the idea of thoughts and prayers, especially when it comes to this sort of thing.
Or like that one black square that we did in 2020, that was like when that unfortunate incident happened with George Floyd and he was tragically killed. That was for the first time, I think, because we were in a pandemic and isolated, that was like never been done, where everyone was like, well, we'll just post a black square. But beyond that, does it change anything? In that moment, I think what was the good thing, I will say, Drew, what social media is good for is organizing and building community and staying in touch. But it has to go beyond that. Like, and I think, how do we take, and I mean, there are people doing it, right? So this is just like us discussing this out loud, but people are doing that in their lives. People are taking action. They are taking, they're not just virtue signaling or posting a performative piece because they want reproductive rights or they want to end gun violence. They're actually doing something about it outside of it.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a vast number that will just stop at that. And we have to go beyond that. And I think one of the other things, just because we just want to reiterate that what we want to do in 2025 is have more community roundtables. I know our goal with this podcast is to really become community-centered engagement, where we do make positive impact through storytelling in communities, so we can start tracking our positive progress, like whatever that means. Like if it means, and we'll have more information in our future episodes on this, but right away, it's like, I think the beautiful thing about podcasts, YouTube, anything, storytelling and community making, is that opening ourselves up to different people that we normally wouldn't break bread with, and and hearing each other out and just saying, oh, okay, how can I diversify my world and exchange ideas? No, truly, because, you know, absolutely, we all have a lot to learn from each other.
Yes, we do. We really do.
I mean, does that sound cheesy? I mean, it does sound cheesy, diversify. Why does that?
I'll make it even cheesier. I'll make it even cheesier for you. So I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. On Boston Public Access TV, we had this show called Zoom.
Oh,
maybe
my God.
People have heard of it. I knew kids that were on Zoom that went to my elementary school, because they would just have local kids come on. And at every episode of Zoom, at the end of the episode, they would say, if you like what you see, turn off your TV and do it.
Oh, I love that.
And that's the thing. Any solution to any problem in our world, it's going to happen offline.
Yeah.
It's great if people are connecting over the internet, if people are sharing ideas and stuff. I love that about the internet and podcasting and even social media. But you gotta, you know, turn off your TV and do it. we were talking about 2020 and the Black Lives Matter protests of that year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I personally was really inspired by the protests I saw happening in my city. My town, I live in Burbank now, Burbank, California. Yeah. We elected a Black Lives Matter mayor in 2020, Constantine Anthony. He's a friend of mine.
Burbank is a small town. We got to invite him to our podcast. I would love to, I know we're not that big, but you know.
Burbank is a small town. It's just got all the studios, but it's a small town.
I know, but I love Burbank. It's so chill.
It is. It's really a beautiful part of LA. Listener, if you don't live in LA and considering moving, consider Burbank.
Burbank is great. It has great places to eat too.
Yes. All my favorite restaurants are here.
True.
Anyway.
That was a paid promotional ad.
Yeah. No, yeah. To take us back to Sick, Sad, and Mad, and I guess what we were trying to communicate with it, like, we're talking now about solutions. What I love about Sick, Sad, and Mad actually is how it really just describes the problem so eloquently. And like another part of it that really spoke to me, I'm going to just read it out here.
Yeah.
Block quote. What are we waiting for? You, savior, you, saint and sinner, you on your pedestals with your big words, with your big promises. Because I think another thing about issues like the sorts of things that make us sick, sad, and mad is that also the solutions that those same sort of algorithmic forces drive us towards are hyper individual. And then a lot of times it's us looking at sort of one individual and like the piece says, putting them on a pedestal. Someone says one thing that sounds kind of right. And then now that person is just like, oh, that's the person that's going to solve all the issues, you know?
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of an example right now, but I think we've all seen things like this where someone is sort of elevated to not necessarily above where they deserve to be, but they're put into a spotlight that they're not prepared for.
Yeah.
Everyone can be a micro celebrity now with social media. And no one, and then it's, you know.
Yeah, but that, you know, that's the thing. It's such a weird bubble. Everyone's like famous somewhere, right? Like, I think it's important to have, to be proud of the work that you're doing, but also to just, I don't know if this is a word to use, but to have some level of humility. I think, yes, I think social media has either we sometimes place too much importance on and make people figureheads instead of being like us being accountable and more community thinking. I know like King Arthur's round table. That's the way I see it. It's like all of us should be at a round table and we're all interconnected, which is what the podcast is all about. Whereas we're not looking for someone to save us, but we are looking that everyone has their wheelhouse and everyone could be a part of the solution. And let's just have that open dialogue and conversations and solutions where it's community centric. Like,
the question to ask yourself is what role can you play in saving yourself, in saving all of us?
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're walking through life having healed your own issues, meaning that if there are things that you're dealing with, like to use that word again, emotional regulation, if you're someone that is really burdened by life and angry, have some grace for yourself and find the resources, help, or community that you can alleviate some of that and come to an understanding, like, what are you angry about and how can you start bringing peace into your life? Because I feel like when we're peaceful individually, we are then members individually, we're peaceful, we're more peaceful in our families, we're more peaceful at work, we're more peaceful. And when I say peaceful, it doesn't mean like not having an opinion, not ever being angry. No, it means that it's a right way to express our anger, the healthy way to transform our anger or into solutions that could actually heal some of the issues we're angry about. And that's the thing, like being solution oriented and having compassion for people. I think as cliche as it sounds, Drew, really the reason why we're having this discussion is that by no means do we ever endorse violence by any kind. But we do understand why people are angry. And we want people to get help if they're angry, but we also want to recognize that whatever the issues are that people are angry about, how can we as citizens of the world be part of the solution? So if something failed us somewhere in life, how can we now provide a solution so other people don't feel as lost and angry too?
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like everyone does have a positive purpose in life. And some of us feel like, you know, accolades are only like titles. But no, I think everyday people are good people is what's keeping this earth spinning and keeping like it's everyday people that are coming together to do good things in the world. And and no one really talks about them because they're not doing negative stuff. They're doing it silently and quietly. So like, however, I mean, I'm speaking very vague, but if you know, you know. That was it. But before we go, Drew, I would like to know, like, just because you are a sound designer, and since this is also, we talk about creativity, how did you approach the spoken word? Like, what was your thought process? And what, when you were like, oh, how do I select music and all that good stuff? In case someone's interested in learning a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, yeah. So my process with this, first, I read the piece several times. I tried to get a first impression of it. And then I remember I felt very strongly that I wanted to hear it read by you in person. And that was actually the first time we met in person. We talked a lot over this, like we are now. But I came by your house and I listened to you read it. We did like 5 takes, I think. And by the end of that, I felt like I understood the, in a sense, the narrative of the piece. There's a story of it, you know. It's a story of how we got Sick, Sad, and Mad. And I started to think about a soundscape that could also tell the narrative. And so I think I remember emailing you and I said, I'm going to use like protest sounds. I'm going to use maybe news sort of clips. I wanted to intersperse it with I think I call them internet sounds. It sounds so so tech illiterate to call them that, but you know, the sound of a like on social media or of a text message sending or receiving,
The ping.
I actually used the sound of like fingers tapping on a phone screen, like typing, you know, rapidly. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say for our listeners, I'm saying this because we have a lot of film and TV people on our podcast season 1, and Drew is a very talented sound designer and editor and producer, and he's working on another project of mine too, so I'm very happy to work with him, and I feel like this would be beneficial for anyone who's listening from that community. I liked how because I haven't worked with a sound design on a spoken word before. Of course, in documentary and film, we work very closely. But it was really cool to see how you really did try to understand the arc of the piece and what emotions. And I liked how you selected the music that would play to that piece. And I really think the whole ensemble came together really well. I would like to know, like, when you're actually editing this or putting this together, like, is there anything else that you pay attention to? Like, is there things that, like, is it like instinctual? Is it like, do you try different things? Because I feel like the piece, especially the piano music that you worked in, really worked well with the emotional timeline of this piece, which I think is really hard to nail. Because we were talking about, we should hire a composer to compose original music. Remember, that was a discussion we also had. And I was like, oh, I don't think we have time to do that. I don't. It's the holiday season. Where are we going to find someone?
We started this around November. So, yeah, you know, well, give yourself some credit, Frida, because you chose those music pieces. You gave me a list of like maybe a dozen pieces of music that you thought would fit. And I ended up choosing 2 of them. In fact, we should really maybe call out what they were. We'll have it in the show notes, listener, if you're curious about to listen to those pieces. But there's 2 of them. And the first one, I actually looped it several times. I hope I'm not explaining the magic trick here.
No, it's fine.
The first piano piece is actually only maybe 1.5 minutes long. But I took it and I basically looped the middle portion of it to get it to the length that I wanted it to be, to where it ends at a point in the piece where it makes sense for that piece of music to end.
Yeah.
And listeners probably noticed that the music cuts out, or doesn't cut out, but it fades out when we get around to, it's the stanza that begins with "the sky is so blue," because when I was, when I was listening to you, read it, Farida, I felt like that was it felt like we got to a resting point at that part of the piece emotionally. I think I remember describing it as like the eye of the storm, because there's a lot of chaos in this piece. There's a lot of chaotic emotions and chaotic things that are causing them. But when we get to that point, it's like a rest. And so I felt like the music should end there. It's quiet. I in that moment, I played the sounds of waves crashing on the beach, like just
I know
zen
I love
sounds.
That I love that I love that.
And because what comes immediately after that felt kind of like almost like a call to action. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily what I liked about I'm looking at the last two stanzas of those is that it feels like a positive thing to end the piece on without necessarily becoming like saccharine or yeah. saying like, oh, we solved this problem, you know, because we haven't solved it. Yeah. But it's like, you know, it begins, you keep on walking, like, okay, there's all this bad stuff. We're not going to deny it, but there is like, you know, life goes on, I guess, in a sense. And so that's when I felt that a piece of music should come in. And then I selected the second one. And that part of it, I really just kind of let the music play it out. I think in some sense, when you're sound designing, there's a point at which less is more. Mm. You know, I had this original idea for the piece where it would kind of, the soundscape would go on and on and on. When I was formulating it in my head, I had this rough idea of like, these sounds are going to go here, this part is going to have these sounds. And it was like all different stuff. Every stanza almost had its own sound design. And I ended up really scaling it back, because I realized that, for one thing, the words and the music kind of speak for themselves in certain parts. And I also didn't want to crowd them. And I felt like I'm not trying to tell this story twice. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to use sound to underline or italicize certain things. That's all. And other than that, the piece speaks for itself.
I think you did a great job, Drew, and I'm really happy to be working with you on another project, because I do think one of the things I really appreciated, your notes and how attentive you were to the actual emotional arc of the piece. Because mm-hmm. when you're working with prose and spoken word, that's kind of like the harmonizing, the music, where it comes mm-hmm. in, and even where you picked out the sounds from the protests and the other little sound bites that you had. I think that's good. Because I think it's so, like you said, it has to be subtle. It can't be overpowering, where it takes away from the message. At the same time, we want it to be reflective, where someone who listens to it, maybe they can visualize whatever that means for them, or they can feel whatever means for them. And they're not, like you said, crowded. So you did a great job. I'm really excited to see what we come up with next. And I definitely wanted to spotlight you for a little bit, just because, you know, you were on our team and people finally get to learn a little bit more about you.
Yeah. You know, what I really love about my job is I'm a technician, but I work really closely with creative people and I get to be creative myself. So my day job, I'm a production sound mixer. So that means that I work on set for movies, TV, commercials, recording the dialogue, basically. Other sound effects too sometimes, but dialogue is really king in my day job. And I'm a technician. My job is technical, but I'm supporting a creative vision. And so I get to think creatively. My job requires me to understand the creative intent in order to make sure that they have the technical tools to achieve it. And with this job, you know, I got to be a little more creative because I was a sound designer. Mm-hmm. But still, I really enjoyed the process of like understanding this piece, figuring out what it means to you, Farida, figuring out what it means to me, and then expressing that through sound was a lot of fun.
Loved it. I know, because this is a podcast. It's a very intimate medium. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have asked us that, are you guys going to do a video podcast? And I'm like, I don't know. Right now, this is a lot easier to produce.
Yeah.
But maybe we will go in that direction at some point. But for now, we're sticking to audio. And what I do like about podcasting, an old school fireside chats and storytelling is that it is a lot more, to use the word, intimate. You feel it's very lived in. You're more immersed in it. And even when it's in the background and you're on your treadmill or you're like in your garage or something, you're still immersed in it. I don't know. It's just, for me, it's just different. And I'm really exploring what audio can bring. There's a revival of audio, obviously. But anyways, I wanted to make sure our audience had a chance to learn a little bit more about what you do in general and then what you did on this piece before we conclude. So
thanks.
So before we go, if you are someone who's feeling a little burdened by their emotions and ever need to talk, there's no shame in sharing this. You know, there's a lot of people that are lost right now and these times are tough. There is help available. And that is, you can text 988 or you can call 988 if you're feeling troubled. But also know that, you know, times are tough, but find your community, find your tribe. And we wish you a wonderful 2025. Drew, anything else like that?
I think that you said it perfectly. We wish you a very prosperous new year. and in this new year, you know, if you felt inspired by this piece or this conversation, take that out into the world and do something positive with it.
If you enjoyed The Slow Dive, please subscribe and leave us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq, edited by Drew Franzblau. Our theme song is Dive by Sarah. Thanks for listening.